Ladies and gentlemen, we'll call the meeting of the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee to order. We'll ask our Committee of Legislative Assistant to note the roll as we come and go here. And members, we do have in our packet the minutes from the last meeting of Wednesday the 27th. The Chair will entertain a motion to adopt the minutes. Representative Champion moves the minutes. Members, you have looked those over? Questions, corrections, comments? Seeing none, let's vote. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The minutes are adopted. Members, today we're going to begin putting together, an omnibus bill. But before we do that, we have a couple of bills we would like to hear yet, some for inclusion in the omnibus bill, and some because we want to direct them also to the general register, which is the case for House File 650. We've heard this bill before in committee and had quite a heartfelt, marvelous presentation, Representative Kiefer. Thank you. So we don't need to hear the bill again, just for purposes of moving it to the general register as well, is the reason the bill is here. So if I could have somebody move the bill. Representative Keel, would you move House File 650, recommend to pass and be referred to, actually, the Committee on Ways and Means, because it has some money attached to it.
I will do that, Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Keel, for moving the bill. Members, further questions or comments to House File 650? There was a cost to the Department of Vehicle Services for publishing some instructional material in the driver's manual. You recall that? And Mr. Farmick, you feel compelled to testify about that? And she does not feel compelled to testify. You have the fiscal note in your book. Folks, further questions or comments regarding that before we send it to Ways and Means? Seeing none, Representative Keel renews her motion that House File 650 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. As many are in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Members, the motion is adopted. The bill is passed the way it means.
Thank you, members. Keel.
Okay, Representative Kraskowski, did you learn anything from that last bill presentation that was...
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Time's up.
Members, okay, seriously, we have House File 1088 in front of us, and Mr. Draskowski, not being a member of the committee, will need someone to move the bill for him. Representative Benson moves House File 1088, and it will be referred also to the Committee on Ways and Means. That will be the motion. And Representative Draskowski, we're looking in the packet here. Is there... Mr. Committee Administrator, is there a fiscal note for this, or will there be? Representative Chowski, do you recall if there was a fiscal note in Environment Committee?
There is not a fiscal note in Environment Committee, Mr. Chair. There is one fiscal concern that Ways and Means wants to take a look at, and that's related to Section 12, which is disaster money that's already appropriated, but it may come into play regarding the current forecast, is what I was told. So. That's why it needs to stop in Ways and Means.
Okay, and members, I just did get a whisper from Ms. Zewers that the fiscal note will be ready for Ways and Means. There is a small one. It is not here yet at this moment. So, Representative Draskowski, the Chair has heard this bill a couple times in a couple of the committees, but for the rest of the committee, would you explain the portions that you believe it concern the Committee on Transportation? And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill to make adjustments to Chapter 12A, which is a chapter that guides the deployment and carrying out of disaster bills as they are passed by this legislature. Mr. Chair and members, Section 11 is the section that deals with transportation, and I will turn it over to Ms. Chris Eide, who is the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management.
Ms. Eide, welcome to the committee. It's good to see you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Section 11 is the section that relates to your committee, and there's a couple of changes that we have made in Chapter 12A that we recognized after the floods of last fall that there were gaps in 12A. The first change is on line 4.15, which is that the Commissioner of Transportation may use the appropriations from the emergency relief account in the Trunk Highway Fund for the infrastructure repair, maintenance, and operations related to a disaster. And these are those dollars that are not eligible under the federal FEMA public assistance program. Also, subdivision 3, lines 4.23 through 4.26, includes the terminology necessary demolition and design costs. We discovered after the 2007 flood in southeast Minnesota that some of the local jurisdictions did not complete their projects, and that was because the costs of demolition and design were not eligible under Chapter 12A or under the disaster relief bill at that time. And so their projects remained undone. So we have added that as an eligible cost under any appropriation that may come through this avenue. Also, it was pointed out very clearly that we can't continue to replace the roads and have them damaged and continue to replace the roads. So those damages that are not eligible for the public assistance FEMA program were not eligible to have any mitigation for those. And this allows some reasonable costs for those mitigation programs if it's an elevation of a road or if it's increasing the size of the culvert. That way the DOT has the ability to pay for any reasonable mitigation projects that may come as a result of those damages. And those are the only changes from the current statute.
Thank you for your testimony. And members, you're looking at the section involved. Are there questions for either Ms. Idy or for Representative Drazkowski? Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Idy. I do have a question about this section, and it deals, I'm going to use an example to maybe illustrate my question. We had about 200 to 250 feet of Highway 169 washed out in the spring, in the fall. And so that roadway was rebuilt at a considerable expense, but no mitigation that I know of was undertaken. My first question would be, would that be the type of project that now could receive mitigation funding to prevent a further or future erosion of the roadway?
Ms. Idy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, yes, that would be the type of project.
Follow-up, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Idy, thank you. And you and I have talked about, and you've educated me on the difference between a presidential declaration and a non-declaration or a lack of a declaration, if you will. And so what I would like to understand for either from Ms. Idy or from Representative Drazkowski, what happens in the event that there isn't a presidential declaration? Would these provisions still come into play? Could the 200 feet of Highway 169 not only be repaired as thought of in this bill, but also have mitigation for future damage?
Either Ms. Idy or Representative Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, no, this would not suffice for that. This 12A is only when there is a presidential declaration of an emergency and there are non-eligible projects, non-eligible for FEMA.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will try to keep this short, Mr. Chair. But, of course, I'm worried about the non-declarations as well. And so I guess, and I'm not sure either one could answer this question, should this or in the future could this be expanded to include damage to roads, bridges that occurs as a result of a natural disaster that does not reach the presidential threshold?
Ms. Idy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, if the language in Section 1, I believe, of 12A were to be changed, then these could have money appropriated by the legislature. But as it stands now, it is only if it's a major declaration.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski, this is coming to my attention a little late, and I'm not blaming you. Acknowledging that I'm now thinking this through. Representative Drazkowski, I'll be talking to you about the potential expansion of this because I'm afraid, at least in my district, we got landlocked, if you will, because both sections of 169 North and South were flooded out. And I know that my constituents are very concerned that it seems like it flooded out, the water goes away, but we have to worry about flooding out the next season, and folks wonder, why don't we do something to take care of the long-term problem. Mr. Chair, I do have really two other questions I want to make sure of. And this is really for Representative Drazkowski. Representative Drazkowski, on Section 12, you've got the flood damage assistance for Hammond and Zumbra Falls. I'm just wondering why limit it. Are there other communities within the state that would also have unspent general funds that we should be including in Section 12?
Representative Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, the flood bill itself, if you'll remember, by nature contains the ability for the Disaster Recovery Task Force to make lateral transfers from unused portions or pots of money to other areas. And so this would allow, in the case of Hammond and Zumbra Falls, it would provide authorization for uses of those of a lateral transfer like that here. And what was going on here is you've got two very small towns that somewhere between 25% and 30% of their houses are going to be leaving through the flood hazard mitigation program. And so that's what you have going on here that is there's nothing like this we've seen before. And I don't know if Miss Idy has, but there's no other towns like this in the whole 25 or 27 county disaster region.
Representative.
And I guess I would ask Ms. Idy, I just want to make sure that we're not leaving another town that would say, oh gosh, we didn't think of X. Are there other towns that would fall within the same qualifications as Hammond and Zumbra Falls?
Ms. Idy, can you speak to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, I have not been notified that there are other other cities that are in the same situation as Zumbra Falls and Hammond.
One final question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski, I'm looking at page 3, lines 3, or well, I'm in section 6. This deals with the nursing home bed layaway. And I was looking at the progress of this bill through committees, and I'm wondering, since this would at least involve the Commissioner of Human Services and the Commissioner of Health, should this go to Health and Human Services?
Representative?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, as a matter of fact, I did bring it before the CA and the chair of the HHS Reform Committee. They've had two separate bills addressing the same thing go through their committee, so they don't need to see the bill.
Thank you. Thank you for your questions. Representative Peel, were you seeking to be recognized?
Yes, Mr. Chair, but I believe that Representative Morrow kind of answered my questions. I have a community in northwestern Minnesota, Oslo, that is an island and has a road problem, although it deals somewhat with North Dakota, so I think there's bigger problems there. So that was, I think I got what I needed answered.
Good, thank you. Members, further questions for either the testifier or Representative Drazkowski? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify about this issue, for, against, or just about? Seeing no one, members, I'm prepared to move the bill with seeing no further discussion. Representative Benson renews his motion that House Bill 1088 recommend to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, members. Next bill on our agenda today is House Bill 1345, Representative Champion. Representative Champion, if you'd move the bill to put it in front of the committee, and we're going to lay this over for probable inclusion in the omnibus bill here shortly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 1345 for possible inclusion in the policy omnibus bill.
Thank you. Members, the bill is before us. Representative Champion, if you'd like to explain the bill, and if you have testifiers to talk to the bill, too, welcome them to come on down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have two testifiers, and we're going to try to be as brief as possible. And I think the best way to proceed, Mr. Chair, is to start with the department, because this is a department bill, and we will go from there.
Ms. Prescott, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
If you identify yourself for those listening at home and for the recorded.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Prescott. I'm the Director of Civil Rights for Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Welcome.
This bill is putting forth and reestablishing a targeted group business program for our state-funded construction programs. First, I just want to clarify that in order to receive federal funding, we administer a DBE, or the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program, on our federally funded projects. We have not had a TGB program being administered by MnDOT for over 10 years now, and we have been Several things were put in place in order to resurrect this at this time. One disparity study was taken with five other state agencies that the results of that showed that we have minority and women, disabled veterans, disparities on all of our categories in highway construction. And two, we have been working collaboratively with our DB and workforce collaborative team that brings together eight stakeholder groups that Robert Woods is going to talk about in a minute. But I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood the difference of the two, that the targeted group business group program is for state-funded construction projects only. The Department of Admin would do the certifying of those businesses, and MnDOT would administer the program. So with that, I would like to just introduce Robert Woods to talk about the collaborative efforts taking place.
Thank you, Ms. Prescott. Mr. Woods, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thank the committee. My name is Robert Woods. I chair the MnDOT's collaborative team's targeted group business program, and I just want to talk just very, very briefly about what that collaborative is. It is a group of stakeholders having wildly, wildly divergent interests, financial interests, business interests, all kinds of philosophical interests. It is comprised of my committee was comprised of the Association of General Contractors, state representatives, non-union shops like Knife River, union shops also, and union representatives. And what the collaborative is a MnDOT type of process of getting stakeholders together to sort of make decisions on what to do with ideas of government like this. And what we came up with is that many of the prime contractors found that lots of the minority women businesses and businesses trying to enter into the major capital intensive heavy highway market need entry points. And the entry points, we went back to the Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan administration and looked at some of the programs that were effective there. And this targeted group business program is directly coming from those kinds of programs. In other words, that the best thing for lots of ethnic minorities as well as disadvantaged businesses and people in the lower socioeconomic as well as the middle income bracket is a job or business opportunity. And this is a way that we came up with that we could not only comply with the law, but we could also stimulate jobs and business in the metropolitan area as well as lots of the rural areas. Because these dollars from the targeted group business program and access to opportunity will also be used to develop what we call emerging markets. Our idea is that if we can get those businesses into the marketplace and hiring from their local communities, then we will develop emerging markets that we can then work with the prime contractors on an international as well as national level and begin what I call an olive branch type of relationship. So we're really pushing this targeted group business program as a solution for jobs and business and a sort of getting away from what we call the social programs that have been helpful and kept us afloat but haven't really prepared us for the marketplace. We like the targeted group business program as an entry into the marketplace and a solution and an answer. Thank you.
Mr. Woods, thank you for your testimony. I know that MnDOT has been working diligently for 3 or 4 years anyhow that I've been paying attention to this, so I commend you for your work and for seeing the process through. I'm sure sometimes it was intense and interesting and difficult, but thank you for bringing it to this conclusion. Representative Champion, do you have any other testifiers or any further comments?
No other testifiers, Mr. Chair, but I would like to go through the bill briefly if I might.
Please.
House File 1345 is a representation of the great work of the Collaborative and MnDOT. Section 1, or Subdivision 1, is just definitions. Subdivision 1A is the legislative findings. You heard from Ms. Prescott about what the findings were, and you'll see that the study found that businesses that are operated and majority owned by non-minority women Individuals with physical disabilities and members of specific minority groups are underutilized in Minnesota's highway and construction contracts. In addition, you'll also see that there was a statistical disparity with veterans as well. In addition, you'll see at the time of these findings, evidence demonstrates that race-neutral measures are ineffective to correct the impact of past discrimination that exists in highway construction and must be supplemented with race and gender-conscious measures. And lastly, in that same section, that you'll see that the state has a compelling interest to remedy the effects of past or present discrimination in the Minnesota highway construction industry through the implementation of the targeted group business program that meets state and federal constitutional guidelines. You'll see in subdivision 2, which starts on page 2, 2.10, provides that the commissioner may award up to a 6% preference in the amount of the bid for specified construction work to small targeted group businesses and veteran-owned small businesses. 2A provides that the commissioner, as a condition of awarding a contract, may set goals that require the prime contractor to subcontract portions of the contract to small targeted group businesses and veteran-owned businesses. And I'll skip down to subdivision 4A, which requires the commissioner of MnDOT and the commissioner of administration to periodically reevaluate the target group business program to determine that a statistical disparity exists between the percentage of contracts awarded to businesses owned by targeted group businesses and the representation of businesses owned by targeted group members among all businesses in the state in the construction category. Subdivision 7 encourages the commissioner to purchase from small targeted group businesses and veteran-owned businesses designated under Minnesota Statute 16C.16 when purchases that are not subject to a competitive bidding process. And last but certainly not least, if you look at Subdivision 8, the bill requires the commissioner to report to the commissioner of administration on compliance at a time and in a manner requested by the commissioner of administration. And I believe that helps the committee to understand what's in the bill. And we'll stand for questions, Mr. Chair, if there are any.
Representative Champion, thank you for your clarity and concision. It's appreciated. Members, questions for Representative Champion or the testifiers? Representative Leidiger?
Yes, thank you. Representative Champion, is this going to go through jobs and economic development or at some point?
Representative Champion, did you talk to them? Because Representative Gunther didn't indicate to me that he needed to see the bill, but did you hear anything to the contrary?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I didn't hear anything from the Jobs Committee that they needed to hear.
Yes. And members, for those of you that have sat through several floor sessions and listened to me rise to speak about findings, and you know how passionate I am about findings, there is one in this bill that must remain in the bill. This has more than just MnDOT policy. There's some things that kind of drove the legislation and drove the action and the fine work that Mr. Woods and the collaborative did. So I will not be rising to speak about findings on this bill. I'm sorry, I was going to give you a heads up to that earlier, Representative Champion, but it just pointed out, and I could see on some of your faces that you were anticipating me saying something, so I'm going to tell you right now that, no, they must be part of the bill, and thank you for your good work. Further questions for Representative Champion or the testifiers? Is there anyone else in the audience that feels compelled to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, I see Representative Szymanski has a question or a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and a question for Ms. Prescott. In the process of, you know, the qualifications of these various bidders in terms of minority or women-owned or veterans-owned groups, are they all on equal footing in terms of what the agency looks at?
Ms. Prescott?
In the targeted group business program, the women and small minority businesses are certified by the Department of Administration, which means they have to be 51% ownership and certified by that administration. When we let a project, everyone bids on that project, and that's all given equal weight, just like it always has. We currently have the veterans program on our projects also, our state-funded projects, so that would remain the same.
Follow-up, Representative?
I guess just for clarification, Ms. Prescott, are they all three groups on equal footing then?
For certification.
Yes.
Mr. Prescott.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Further questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative Champion renews his motion that House Bill 1345 be laid over for probable inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Prescott, Mr. Woods, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
House Bill 1333, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr.
Nelson,
Chair.
Welcome to the committee, and I'm noticing that yours will also be laid over for inclusion here in a few moments in an omnibus bill.
So I'll make that motion to pass for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Good, thank you. Your bill is in front of us. Representative Nelson, if you explain House Bill 1333 or let your testifier do so, we'd
Mr. Chair, I'll let my testifier explain the bill and go from there.
Mr. Heifetz, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Jay Hippus. I'm MnDOT's Innovative Contracting Director. I'm going to be describing House File 1333, which is Construction Manager General Contracting. MnDOT primarily has two methods right now for procuring construction contracts. Method one is design bid build, which most of our projects historically have been. With design bid build, the risk of the design stays with MnDOT. Basically, MnDOT designs a project. We then go out for a low bid, and the lowest bid contractor is awarded the contract and constructs the project. So there's very little contractor involvement until we actually get out in the field with the process. Our other method we have is design build. We've seen recently on many design build jobs a lot of contractor innovation. With design build, the contractor actually designs and constructs a project. So some recent examples are the Hastings Bridge on Highway 61, 169-494 Interchange, a job on 169 in St. Peter, and the 610 expansion project through Maple Grove. We've seen a lot of contractor innovations which have really reduced the cost of our construction projects. But design build is not suited for every single project. There is risk transfer that goes along with design build to the design build contractor. So we need to look at different procurement methods for different options. What CMGC does, it kind of combines the two methods together. We gain the input of the contractor experience early on in the process, but yet as MnDOT, we actually control that design versus design build with it. The process is basically broken into two different phases. In phase one, we select the contractor very early. Like I said, in our traditional projects, the contractor is not brought on until the very end, first time construction. Here we would bring on a contractor very early in the process to help us through a lot of our design issues, give us constructability reviews, help us with our cost estimating to help us control our scopes within our budget, and really help us manage some of the risks that go along with the project, help us with our permitting issues, help us with our environmental issues, with the goal of lowering the overall risk on the project, which therefore would lower the overall cost of the project. So they're working very closely with us during phase one. During phase two, we actually would negotiate a price with that contractor to go out and build it. And the benefits here are, on a normal MnDOT project, we dictate the terms and conditions in our contracts. And here the contractors are able to actually work with MnDOT to say, MnDOT, there's certain risks here we'd like to mitigate as part of the contract negotiation process. So by working closely with the contractor in that, we can mitigate those risks and lower the overall construction costs that go along with it. So we're hoping that this is kind of a cross between design build and design bid build contracting, which is really going to help us manage these complex and challenging projects without losing some of the risk and transferring that risk to the design builders.
Mr. Hippus, you say it?
Hippus.
Hippus.
Thank you.
Question for you before I turn to the members. I'm thinking of the Wakota Bridge project, which was design, bid, build, and Lord, we wish it had been designed. Had it been a construction manager, general contractor kind of arrangement there, and when the cracks developed and we had to stop everything, where would that risk have gone?
With that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, with that project, we would have a contractor involved with us early on in that project. But with construction manager, general contractor, the risk of the design still stays with MnDOT. We are the owners of the design, computer design, bid build.
Okay.
But we're hoping we'll have a contractor on board with us. We might be able to catch some of those things compared to a traditional process. Say the Wakota Bridge project had very little contractor involvement into that plants that actually went to the street for letting. But having that contractor work with us on how he's actually going to construct it, that was a very unique construction method, how they used out there. Mm-hmm. And having that contractor work with our designers to optimize that design for efficiency and how he would build it, would have probably reduced the cost on that project. Right now we design a project for any contractor to build, so they're not really specialized to that contractor's needs on it. Here the contractor can actually help us design it the most efficient way for him to build it.
Then I imagine the selection project, Mr. Hippis, would be similar to design build then, a qualified applicants, and you could select from a pool, or would it be closer to design bid build?
Mr. Chair, representing the committees, it'd be closer to design build. The contractors would be selected based on their qualifications on it.
Thank you. Members, questions for the testifier or Representative Nelson, Representative Benson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have seen this bill before. My guess, what my question is, in terms of qualifications, what's the list that we know of that we have? I have a concern about how big that pool is, who will be excluded, how many people can do the work, and can you help me with that?
Mr. Hippis?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have a similar process in design build. We've seen an ample pool of contractors. It all depends on the size and scope and complexity of the projects. It typically ranges from 3, sometimes up to 6 contractors that would be bidding on our design build projects. These would be projects that our contractors here are used to a building on it. So we have a pretty good pool of grading contractors, bridge contractors. So we'd anticipate those same contractors would just be working with us early versus later on.
Follow up, Representative Benson?
Just briefly. So in your study of putting this bill together, you feel that there are ample numbers of contractors in each type of project that you might let that would allow for a good competitive bid. My concern is that we have a very small pool, they get really good at this, and we see prices driven up.
Mr. Hippis?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would be picking the projects based on the risk, and one of those risks we'd be looking at is what is the contractor pool for the project. Before we decided to go with this procurement method, we'd evaluate all the different procurement methods. We've also added in some additional cost controls with this method. As you get down to phase 2, we're actually negotiating the price of this contract. MnDOT would be performing a cost estimate. We'd have an independent third party perform a cost estimate to make sure the taxpayers are getting a very fair price for it. If for some reason we can't negotiate a price with that contractor, we always have the plan sets that we've designed to actually go and let that out with our traditional design bid build process. So we're not actually locked in. Our goal is to always, if possible, negotiate that contract with the contractor. Utah DOT has done this quite a bit. They've always found a reasonable price. They have yet to have to go back and bid out a job design bid build, and that would be our exact same goal too. But we do have that option.
Okay, good. Thank you. Good questions. Representative Nelson, there's an A1 amendment in our packet, or was just handed to us, actually.
Yeah.
Is that yours?
Yes, it is, Mr.
Would
Chair.
You like to move that?
Mr. Burris, I guess, emailed this to me and MnDOT this morning, and I would like to move that the A1 amendment be put on. My understanding is technical in nature, and maybe Mr. Burris can better explain it.
Okay, Representative Nelson moves the A1 amendment to House Bill 1333. Mr. Burris, would you explain what we're seeing here?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, there is one policy piece to the amendment. It's primarily technical. The policy element is adding to a legislative reporting provision that the ranking minority member on the transportation committees would also be notified. This is part of the notification that MnDOT would provide to the legislature when they pursue this procurement method. The other changes under the amendment are technical in nature. They clean up some timing issues with evaluation of the RFP, fixes a typo, puts in a little bit more with consistent terminology, and then there are some conforming changes to some of the structural shifts, and also gets rid of a sort of duplicated concept. And I can get into more detail if there are any questions on it.
Okay, let's see if there are. I think I understand what you're doing here. Representative Nelson, further comment to it? Or members, do you have questions regarding the A1 amendment? Seeing none, let's vote on the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Thank you. Further questions for the testifier or for Representative Nelson? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against or about House File 1333? And I know just members having been a part of this process for the last several years, I do know that others have participated in the development of this, and there have been some concerns. However, there are assurances that people will be working through any difficulties that may come up over the next year or two, and that's part of the reporting process and so on and so forth. So the chair feels very comfortable in moving ahead with this.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. President Nelson.
And the AGC still has some concerns about this, and they're working with the MnDOT currently to get language Hopefully we'll have it before the bill and amend the bill. And basically, they want to limit the number of projects instead of one or two per year. Mm-hmm. They want to limit it to 10 overall, and MnDOT is happy with that. And then after it's done, then have sunset the program and then see how it worked out and evaluate it and then come back and maybe put this in full time. It's similar to the way we did design build for building projects in the past, as we limited it to the number of projects to start out with so that people could get used to the process, see how it works, walk before we run, and then evaluate it. And as we move forward, if it works out well, then we can have more projects in the future.
Representative Nelson, that sounds like a wise course of action. Thank you. Further questions, comments? Seeing none, members, let's vote on House File 13. No, this is laid over. Excuse me. We will lay this over, and we'll take this up shortly. Representative Nelson, thank you. Mr. Hippis, thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. House File 1310, Representative Schmansky. If you'd like to present this bill. And members, this bill will become a vehicle for part of the year, one of the vehicle bills for omnibus transportation bill. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. Representative Schmansky, I see you have a fiscal note with parentheses on it. So that's a nice one. We like to see
yes.
those times.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we do have a fiscal note, $5,000 to the positive. So.
Okay, Representative Schmansky, this bill will be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, but if you'll give me just a moment, I need to have a sidebar here with the Committee Administrator. Thank you, Representative Schmansky. If you would move your bill and recommend it to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, that'll be the path for this
Thank
bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move House File 1310 be recommended to pass and move to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you. Representative Schmansky, I don't know if we had 1310 in front of the committee before.
We have.
We have. So this has been seen before, members.
Yes.
Are there further questions to the 1310 bill before we offer a couple of amendments, which will increase its heft substantially? So, seeing none, we understand. We recall the discussion on House File 1310. Fiscal note for 1310. Okay, members, in your packet you have a DE1 amendment to House File 1310, and there should be a smaller sheet that lists the bills that we have heard that are included in this DE1 amendment. I'm going to give you just a moment to find that and get it in front of you. While they're doing that, Representative Schmansky, if you'd like to move the DE1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the DE1 amendment to House File 1310.
Okay. And do you have this sheet? Can you briefly describe the bills that have been included in the DE1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Pardon me while I put on my glasses here.
We will pardon you.
Sorry. Mr. Chairman, the DE1 amendment contains House File 1367, authored by Representative Banyan, MnDOT agency provisions. They're also amended by a previous delete to all amendment. We also include House File 1434 by Representative Gauthier at the request of MnDOT for working capital loans. And then we include House File 1105 by Representative Keel for pickup registration and plates dealing with private use of vehicles in an upper weight class range. House File 1367, again, Representative Banyan with some agency provisions from MnDOT. House File 1289 by Representative Mack. MnDOT provisions for shoulder use by buses. The Schmansky original 1310 on commercial vehicle permitting. And House File 1482 by Representative Hornstein. DPS driver's license credit card payment provisions are included in this DE1 amendment. House File 1378 by Representative Biskins with, again, a MnDOT provision for alternative financing of pilot projects. We then include House File 1367, another Banyan provision there from the MnDOT agency. And then we drop down to House File 1067 by Representative Nelson for the rail bank property bill that we heard previously in this committee. And then we also have another provision from 1105, Representative Keel, again on the pickup plates. Mr. Chairman, are there any other provisions?
Mr. Representative Schmansky, give me a pause for a moment because there might be two other ones here, but hold on just a moment.
Okay.
Representative Schmansky, yes, I think that will complete the list for your bill. We have no other amendments for this bill. We do have a couple of amendments for the next bill that are coming up, so we'll add some bills that we've just heard and considered for probable inclusion to the next House file that comes up, members. And there are no other amendments at the desk, so let me let Representative Schmansky stand for questions if necessary. Is there compelling testimony we have not heard before on any of these provisions? For House File 1310, actually, members, the motion before us is the DE1 amendment. The DE1 amendment to House File 1310. Seeing no discussion of the DE amendment, as many as are in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The DE1 amendment is adopted. And now we have your House File 1310 as amended, Representative Schmansky. Members, are there further questions to this first omnibus bill? And one last time, members in the audience that feel compelled to testify to House File 1310 as amended. Seeing none, members, let's move to a vote. Representative Schmansky, would you renew your motion for House File 1310 as amended?
Mr. Chairman, I move that 1310 be recommended to pass and sent on to the Ways and Means Committee.
Ways and Means Committee as amended. As amended. Many as are in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to Ways and Means
Chairman and Committee.
Thank you, Representative Schmansky. Okay, members, at this time I'm going to turn over the gavel to the vice chair, and I'm going to go up and we'll present hopefully the last bill on the calendar for the day. Mr. Chairman and members, I'd like to move House File 1068, a bill which has yet to be heard in front of the committee. So if we can take a few moments to explain House File 1068 and stand for questions, and there is some testimony regarding House File 1068, I think that would be good for the process. Members, House File 1068 was introduced a couple of months ago in regards some reporting on expenditures from the Highway Trunk Fund. It is a joint effort of the Minnesota Chamber and the Transportation Alliance. And, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to introduce two testifiers, Ms. Donahoe and Ms. Bodine. And they would be happy to explain the concept behind it and to entertain your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. We'd like to thank Chairman Beard for introducing this bill and the Minnesota Chamber for working with us on this. We're also very pleased to see that the committee this year has been really interested in digging into the details of MnDOT's budget and how dedicated funds are spent in the state. We think that's really important. Back in 2008, we were very fortunate that Alliance members and partners like the Minnesota Chamber worked with the legislature to pass the transportation funding bill that included increased revenue for transportation. And so, of course, we want to make sure that those funds are being spent as efficiently and effectively as possible, and that you all understand exactly what's happening with the funds that you appropriate in your budget bills. In addition, we think it's important right now, with some of the low bids that have been coming in on projects, that there's more information available on the impact of that on the rest of the program. For instance, the Hastings Bridge project, the engineer's estimate on that was around $220 million. The award price was closer to $120 million. So we've seen some very significant savings on some of the major projects around the state, which raises questions about what happens to the rest of the program. Will other projects be accelerated? And we think it's important to have that information reported on a regular basis. A couple years ago, the Alliance supported legislation creating a major projects report on an annual basis. That was had bipartisan support, was carried by Representative Simon in the House and Senator Latz in the Senate. Partly because of a schedule change dealing with Highway 100. And there were a lot of questions about when projects were scheduled, where that was recorded, what happens when project schedules change, and why do those project schedules change. And so this report was enacted into law to make sure that the legislature was kept apprised of what was happening with some of these projects around the state and their schedule. So I've provided a handout mainly so you can see kind of what's in the current report, as well as the biennial trunk highway expenditure report, which is also in current law. And the goal of this bill today is to combine those two reports into one report and to add some more detailed information to the report. So as you can see on this handout, there's a spreadsheet that shows the major projects around the state, and this is really designed to be a 15-year look. So over the next 15 years, these are the major projects in the state by MnDOT district. So you can see for different parts of the state which projects are planned and when, and what the cost estimate is for those projects. In addition to that, there is a couple of pages behind the spreadsheet that are examples of the kinds of description that's in the report for each of these projects. And the department has done a really good job of providing really important information. And you can see in this particular, the first example is on I-35 in District 1, that you can see the history of the project, you can see why it's important. You can see that the original letting date was 2011. The current letting date is now 2013. And the idea is to explain why those changes happen in the schedule. And you can see in this case, it was partly because of cuts to the state road construction budget, and that the cost has increased, and also the scope has increased. So this is the kind of information that we think is important for the legislature to see every year. And behind those two pages is some information that shows you what's in the current biennial trunk highway expenditure report, which has some pretty rough numbers, we think, this page here. It does show by category the two-year spending amount for road construction, for professional technical contracts, these different categories. But we think it would be more helpful for you to first of all see an annual number, to see this information by MnDOT district, to get more specifics about what's being spent, the products and services that are being provided, so you have a better sense of how the funds that you're appropriating are being spent. And then the last page is simply a table that I think provides a really good outline of how trunk highway funds are being spent annually. You can see the funds, the target funds that are distributed to each of the districts. You can see the District C funds, how those are spent. You can see the state highway, trunk highway bond funds, how those are being spent. And then there's some other funding initiatives. And we think this is the kind of information that this bill will help provide to you every year in terms of how these funds are being spent and what they're being spent on. So that's really the goal of the bill. There's also some language asking for an audit of the different management systems that the department is currently using, and that audit could be done either by MnDOT's internal audit department or by an outside consultant that the department could hire to do that kind of work. But that information is kind of put out into 2012 and 2013. It wouldn't be part of the next report that would be due this December. Thank you.
Should we do questions after they're done, Mr. Chair? Certainly. Okay. Ms. Bodine, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, I'm Lisa Bodine with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and we also thank Representative Beard, Chairman Beard, for bringing this bill forward. The Minnesota Chamber supports the modifications to the Trunk Highway Expenditures and Major Highway Projects Report. We believe that the modifications will actually enhance the information that is already provided to policy makers and stakeholders. We believe it's important to note that the Chamber is supportive of and encouraged by MnDOT's flagship initiatives and the progress that they have made over the past several years, particularly regarding the design build process, performance-based design, and safety measures. We appreciate the innovative approaches and want to ensure that with this bill that additional burden was not placed upon the department to any extent possible, and we've been working with MnDOT as of late just to ensure that this bill does not place additional burden on them. As you can imagine, for a Chamber of Commerce and for our business members, effective management of resources are a high priority for us. And as Ms. Donahoe testified, I think she identified several different valid business rationale for why the legislature and the public should really have access to additional information comparing project bid prices to actual cost, just to identify or to ensure that there's more transparency and more accountability looking back as well as looking forward. So we actually really believe that these reporting requirements do set a foundation for improved productivity in both financial and business management practices moving forward, not just with this particular report, but in other instances as well. And that it will help ensure that there's consistent, reliable, and relevant data that is provided across all districts of the state. So, and as is true with any analytical tool, the information is really only as good as what you do with it. And so the Minnesota Chamber is committed to working with the Transportation Alliance and policyholders or policymakers and stakeholders to ensure that that we help analyze this information and ensure that it is used to make sound decisions in the future. And with that, we again thank Chairman Beard and encourage your support.
Okay, thank you very much. Members, questions of the testifiers? Representative Leidiger.
Thank you. This is an amazing report. I got to make that comment. Have we done this before? Is this the first time that this has come out?
Ms. Donahoe.
Mr. Chair and Representative Leidiger, this is the third year that this report has come out. So there was 2009 was the first year that the report was done. And it is a really impressive report in terms of the information that's provided. One of the things that the bill does, though, is to lower the threshold for the projects that would be included in that report so that hopefully you would see information on more projects than what you're seeing as well. Because, for instance, in this year's report, in District 8, there are three projects. And to put that in context, for this year's construction season, MnDOT just announced, there will be 258 projects this summer. This is a 15-year look. And in terms of major projects, there really, in some districts, there aren't very many for the next 15 years. So that's part of why we are calling for the threshold to be lowered in terms of the number of projects and the kind of projects that would be included in the report. So you would get this information on more projects around the state.
Well, follow up?
Yes, please. What did you say the threshold was right now, please?
Ms. Donahoe.
Mr. Chair, the threshold right now is $25 million in the Metro District and $10 million in Greater Minnesota Districts.
Okay. Well, great. And, Mr. Chair, to be fair, MnDOT may want to comment on that here after a few moments. I think it's good we're having this discussion now, but to be fair, they may want to comment on that. They may not. But just
well, and I'll make, Mr. Chairman,
another follow-up.
Yes, one more comment. I mean, not only is this good as a great management tool, I think, for us, but I can see, you know, business owners would love this kind of this information. We don't, because I don't know if it's really put anywhere else where you actually see a bid information, you know, projected information and then actual cost. I'd love it if I was bidding this thing out. So anyway, I just want to make those comments. Thank you.
Members, any further questions of the testifiers? Seeing none, thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, before you ask, was anyone else, let me just note that, yes, this struck me as reporting stuff that we could actually read. I love the format. It's pretty usable. And in the interest of no net gain of reports, I know some of us think about those things. The repealer actually does basically replace other reports with this one, so that we have no net gain of reports from MnDOT to generate. And I'm pleased that you're generating report in a way of fashion. It looks like we can actually find useful information. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, should we move to your DE amendment?
Yeah, if there's no one else testify for or against this, Eric, do you want to?
I'm sorry, members in the audience, anybody to testify for or against?
Well, okay.
Seeing none.
Having heard the, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, having heard the discussion, I know there was interest, but I think there's a pretty workable spirit among all the parties involved. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm ready to move amendments if we could do that. So there is the DE3 amendment that I'd speak to. And members, Mr. Chairman, if I may, what we've kind of done here is we've laid up the omnibus bills. As we Representative Schimanski's House File 1310 contains the mostly, in fact, it's entirely made up of MnDOT agency bills and DPS, Department of Public Safety agency bills. So those are encompassed in House File 1310. What we've attempted to do with the House File 1068 is take all of the other bills that have been offered for consideration this year, some which we've already moved on, some we're just putting back into the program here in part of the DE3 amendment. You have the information sheet in front of you. Let's see. I suppose I could take just a moment to read those through, Mr. Chair. In Section 1 of the bill is the MnDOT Data Practices Bill, which MnDOT talked about the other day, and it was amended in the...
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, I don't think we formally moved the amendment.
Oh, the DE3 amendment.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, let's see. Let's move the DE3 amendment to House File 1068. I'd like to put that in front of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The data practices started here. House File 1060 took a trip to civil law, had some amendments made, and we're incorporating them, I believe, here. The House File 1412, Mr. Representative Murray's bill, allowing electric-assisted bikes on trails, is in this bill. Representative Banning had an agency provision in House File 1367. House File 93, Representative Liebing, had a memorial bridge, a bridge memorialized and signage permitted. That is in the bill. Representative Gauthier's bill is also in here. Some of these are traveling two tracks. Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain why that is, but maybe Mr. Burris, thank you, and it would come to me soon, can explain why we've done that, but it seemed prudent to do so. Mr. Burris?
Mr. Burris, can you shed some light on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I was following your lead on that.
Oh, no, you did it just the way I asked you to do it. I'm sure it was because I like Representative Gauthier's bill so much I put it in two places.
I absolutely should
do it. Okay. Well, members, you can stroll down the list and see that there are a few others like that. Representative Teal's bill is now in two places as well. Let's see. It will have to go to Ways and Means because there are some that touch money. Representative Teal's pickup truck registration and plates and Representative Sarah Anderson's anatomical gift donation provision require, and a few others require some attention to that. Perhaps, Mr. Chairman, it would be best if I stood for questions on this rather than read every one of these on this list. I know the members of the committee have had time to actually see the list and have some consent on what's happening. There is one, members, that I will mention, House Bill 587 on the back. We had a hearing late one evening regarding the Dan Patch. Members, I did offer an amendment that actually takes care of some of the difficulty that we had with some of our legislative friends and folks who testified. Originally, my bill was just to repeal the prohibition altogether. However, this repeals the prohibition against referring to it in documents, official planning documents, and considering it for the future, but does stipulate that if money is to be spent on pre-engineering or any environmental assessments or working plans, they can't spend money without coming back here for legislative approval. But it does remove the gag rule so that appropriate government agencies can actually refer to it and place it on maps again, which satisfies in a small way my consternation that we were gagging the agencies from even talking about things. And I think that will find peace in the valley when it gets to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And excuse me, I was thinking along the same lines of to open this up to questions and let the members ask certain questions about certain bills to move this along. And Representative Nelson has the first question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the chair touched on this, but I just was on the back page, Section 70, the repealers, and there's three of them there, or five of them there. And I guess they're on the back page what they say what they are. So that's the Dan Patch prohibition repeal. Cornish's conservation officer that we heard the other day. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's what those are explained there in the back.
Yes, and to be clear, if I can just ask Mr. Burris, the repealer then for the Dan Patch, that repeals just the provisions we discussed that are in the amended application, correct?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the repealer of the Dan Patch in Section 70 is a full repeal, but the concept is being presented in two other sections that you. So the basic approach that you discussed is now being established in statute. You can see sections 57 and 58 of the bill for that language being put into place in statute that would replace the repealed prohibition.
Thank you for the clarification.
Members, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recall that there was a Rukavina bill on a local road that the department had an issue with. Is that the one listed here, and has that been resolved? Or the department, I thought, had a fairly clear statement about that.
Chair Beard.
Yes, they did, Representative Hausman. It is included here. It is not included in the Senate side, I would point out. And I would am led to believe by discussions with both the department and Representative Rukavina that magnificent progress is being made to resolve the issue because we brought it to their attention. So I would like to ask the committee to leave it in the House version, at least as it makes it through the floor. But yes.
Members, further questions of the DE3? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the DE3, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? And the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, there are a couple other amendments here, too, to be offered. Another one is an agency initiative from Department of Public Safety, I believe, regarding booster seats. That would be the A5 amendment. And I think that, if I'm not mistaken, Representative Portman presented this concept to us the other day. And this encapsulates what they need to accomplish some technical conformance and issues there in the A5 amendment. I'd move the A5 amendment and urge its adoption.
Members, any discussion to the A5? Representative Gauthier had his hand up first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairman Beard, is this the Hortman legislation that keeps us in federal compliance for grants? I think we're looking at $378,000.
Mr. Chair, yes. This is it, and I'm going to look to my PPS people. They don't have to, unless you'd like PPS to come down and testify to the amendment, but yes, so, this is the one that keeps us in compliance.
Thank you.
Yes.
That was your question. Okay. Representative Leidiger.
I just heard this last session. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Members, further questions on the A5? Seeing none, all in favor of the A5 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer the A6 amendment and move its adoption.
All righty, to your A6.
This, again, Mr. Chairman and members, is an initiative from Department of Public Safety. Apparently, there was some oversight in a drafting provision of the interlock bill that we passed last time. And you know, I have rather libertarian sensibilities that have been referred to a few times, so I don't carry this one lightly. But it was pointed out to me that for someone who is blood alcohol content is twice the legal limit, is supposed to have an automatic one-year revocation, which I find problematic because then you can't go to work, you lose your job, things snowball and get even worse. However, with the provisions of the interlock legislation that we passed last time, I'm given to understand that you still get the mandatory revocation. However, if you agree to abide by the interlock provisions, you can have your driving privileges reinstated with the interlock caveat shortly, 30 days, something to that effect. So you can actually hold your job and continue to work then as long as you stay sober and comply with the interlock provisions. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm comfortable offering this amendment, which cleans up some apparently misdrafting and brings the law into conformity with what we had originally intended.
Questions to the A6. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't serve on public safety. We did not hear this in committee, but I believe, like I said, that's what I thought when I saw this. This is Representative Smith's bill, but I don't believe we heard it in our committee here this year.
Mr. Chairman.
Chair Beard.
I believe that is correct. It was on the list of bills to be heard, and we did not hear it, but we're asked to put it in this bill. And I don't know if it's traveling anywhere else. Let me look at my public safety friends who are conferring among themselves. Is the perhaps you may want to, Mr. Chair, may I call someone from the Department of Public Safety to actually
Certainly.
Speak to the Amendment A6?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it would be nice if we had some testimony on
it. This would be
using a light sign.
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, we're trying to find the right testifiers to say the right things about the right amendment. So give us just a moment here. Mr. Chairman, we're ready to go here now.
Okay, welcome to the committee. And would you please identify yourself and give us your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joan Kupchinski, Driver Services Director, Department of Public Safety. In essence, the 2010 DWI ignition interlock legislation was passed to create effective administrative sanctions for impaired driving by creating a path for safe and legal driving for high-risk drivers through the use of ignition interlock. These high-risk drivers include first-time offenders with an alcohol concentration level of 0.16 and repeat DWI offenders. The language is needed to implement DWI legislation regarding driver license sanctions for impaired driving and the use of ignition interlock as prescribed by the 2010 legislature. The current law, however, fails to clearly define revocation periods for those convicted of violating Minnesota Statute 169A.20 whose blood alcohol content is twice the legal limit but less than 0.20. House file, the file would eliminate ambiguity in the law regarding the length of revocation time for first-time DWI offenders and further aligns DWI law. House file 1109 clearly defines a one-year revocation period for a first-time conviction of a DWI if the offender's alcohol concentration level is twice the legal limit or greater.
Thank you. Representative Nelson, does that answer your question?
That answers my question, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Burris came down and whispered in my ear, and he said that we did hear this in committee, and it was a day that it went through real fast, and I vaguely remember Representative Smith leaving as I was coming in from another committee at that day. So,
okay.
Mr. Chair, I think I was somewhere else that night as well, probably where Mr. Nelson was.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Joan. If I may call you Joan, I'm going to butcher your last name, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your testimony. Representative Szymanski, you had a question?
I will pass.
You'll pass. All right. Members, any other questions on the A6? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the A6 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the A6 is adopted. To the A7.
Mr. Chairman, the A7 is mine as well, and I have an oral amendment to the A7 amendment on Mr. Burris on line 1.5. If we strike the word shall and insert the word may, which then I believe members would necessitate that we go to line 1.8 and after the word necessary put a period and strike the balance of that sentence. That would be my oral amendment.
Okay. Mr. Burris, do you have that? And would you repeat that, please?
Mr. Chair and members, the oral amendment would be on page 1, line 5 of the amendment. Delete shall and insert may. Page 1, line 8. Delete the comma and everything after the comma and insert a period. Page 1, delete line 9.
Thank you. That'd be my amendment. I'd urge its adoption. My amendment to the amendment, unless I could just incorporate it into the A7. Just do that?
We can do that.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, this is a work in progress as well. There is a, we had a presentation, excellent presentation the other day by Representative Westrum and the folks from Elbow Lake. Regarding a seaplane base license on what used to be known as Worm Lake. That's what I recall. I can't say that word. I think it's, is it Fleckeford?
Fleckeford, yeah.
So I'd like this issue to be put into the bill to move things forward because there is advancement being made in the discussions, and I think we may come to resolution before this becomes law. But I wish it would remain in the bill. If you'd grant me the indulgence, I'd appreciate the adoption.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, this is the, as I think you mentioned, this is the bill that Representative Westrum brought forward.
Yes.
And offered to fly us all in there.
Yes.
As the pilot.
After you, Representative.
Representative Biscombe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Bearden, whether or not I'm going to support this, but I do have a couple of questions. Not knowing seaplanes at all, I guess, do most seaplanes also carry wheels besides those little floaty things?
Chair Beard.
There are two kinds. There are the straight floats that have no wheels, and then there are what they call amphibious floats that do have wheels. Yes, so they can land on runways or water.
Representative Biscombe.
So, Mr. Chair and Chair Beard, and very serious about this because I did notice on the map that this lake is approximately, 100 feet from an airport runway? So I guess my question is, is it like 95% have wheels and 5% don't, or, I don't know. What is your best guess, Representative?
Yeah, it might be more like 90-10.
Okay.
But a fair amount of them are amphibious. There are a fair amount of straight floats, aren't there, though?
Okay. Thank you.
Members, any further questions to the A7? Seeing none, all in favor of the A7 as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A2 amendment, and whose amendment would that be? We have a question mark on the list here.
Well, Mr. Chair, this would be Representative Quam. I heard a bill the other day, and I don't know, is there anybody who's going to move this amendment, or?
Oh, Quam.
It's in, not my district, but I'll move it. Is this his possible inclusion? Or?
Yes.
Okay, so Representative Benson moves the A2 from Representative Quam.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Chair Beard.
Mr. Chair, I was thinking this was the municipal state aid transition. This actually should be a bill. Members, I was pretty proud of the work the committee was doing the other night on this amendment. That's what committees do when there's issues that need to be resolved. I'm not clear that this has reached that point, and I think there's time yet. This isn't a time-critical situation with this driveway access, and I really wish we would take this up as a bill next year. Rather than defeat it, though, I'd like to respectfully request that we withdraw the A2 amendment and take this up as a bill again next year.
And Representative Benson withdraws the A2. And we're on to the A4.
Okay. Just a moment here.
And we need somebody to move the A4 amendment.
Yes.
Representative Benson?
I'll move. Yes, please.
Move the A4. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the A4 amendment, we also had good hearing on, but there was some, I sensed general consensus we were heading in the right direction, but it was concerned about time limits and not letting this get too out of hand, too open-ended. And I think Representative Quam, working with Mr. Burris, actually did good work on this one, in my opinion. But I'll let the committee decide, but I think we would be very safe adopting this amendment, particularly since Mr. Burris actually drafted it. So.
Members, question the A4? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I have a question for Representative Biskins, because I know at the committee that meeting that night, he's the one that raised the question about, you know, that it could go on in the way it was originally written, it could go on for eternity, mm-hmm. Back to when we first passed municipal state aid funding back in the 20s. So that's the question I have for Representative Biskins, if he's comfortable with the 3-year, if that meets his his objections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nelson. Frank, we know because the argument was made that you'd already pre-planned your budgets. And as a city council member, we don't pre-plan our budgets 3 years out. All right. I think if you're caught in the 1 year, then because you thought you were being told you were, you planned for it, and now the census comes out and you're not. Well, you shouldn't pull the rug out from under the municipality at that time. 3 years is far too long, but I do think the concept should be in here, so I'm going to support this right now and continue to work with the chairman.
Representative Guthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representative Biskins, and 3 years is too long. Being a city councilor, I mean, we've debated back and forth about biennial budgets, annual budgets, so on and so forth. So I'm wondering if an oral amendment of 1 year would do it.
Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would defer to Chairman Beard as he moves forward with his bill.
Your call, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Beard.
Mr. Chairman, not that I'm punting, but before I make the call, I remember the discussion with Representative or Mr. Burris regarding this section of law and why we wanted him to actually write it so that it actually lines up and makes sense. Mr. Burris, changing this from 3 years to 1 year on the fly, is that going to cause anything, in your opinion, that would cause the wings to fall off of anything?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, no, I wouldn't foresee an issue with that kind of change. It would just be a policy question for the committee and the legislature.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if that's the case, I would support striking the word three and making it one. That'd be fine with me.
Right here. Representative Benson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe before we do, maybe a compromise in there. I'm just thinking about how we spend money and how long sometimes it takes contracts, and if we're looking at road construction and all the things, I've seen contracts get delayed and the money not spent. I'm just worried that 12 months is maybe too quick. If maybe 2 years, we could at least consider. I agree that 3 years is probably an extended amount of time, but I've seen work in Rochester just recently get delayed, and my worry is that the 12 months isn't quite enough. If 2 years would work, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Guthier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, I don't think it has anything to do with money. It has to do with the population and that projection. And so, which opens you up or you get refused access to funds. And so, for example, 2009, some cities were told yes, and then 2010 came and they were told no. And this would protect those cities. And I believe one of them was in Representative Quam's district. So I don't think this changes that. So that's why I'm looking at the 1 year.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, unless I'm missing something, I guess what we're looking at is they missed it by about 15 people, so they wouldn't be eligible for that. So they would automatically come off that next year unless we extended a year. I'm just worried unless we go one additional year, if they've not used whatever was needed to be used, qualifying under the 5,000 rule, that's where we'd get in trouble. And I could be missing something. I certainly would. I'd be open.
I will split hairs with you.
Okay.
Representative Biscuits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would love to hear what former local unit of government official from Shakopee has to say when they budgeted, but it's a much larger municipality than what I experienced in Jordan. however, you know, it's the whole idea of pulling the rug out from somebody, and we created our budgets on an annual basis. All right. So if in 2009, you know, everything was assumed, number one, if in 2009 we were that darn close, we at least in Scott County would have budgeted very conservatively and even anticipating not getting the money. However, if we did budget to considering we're going to get the money, I'm sure we wouldn't have said, and we need it for 2-3 years because we only budget annually. So my thought.
Thank you for the thoughts.
Yeah.
Chair Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The number I'm picking is 2 for this reason. He was reminding me I was indeed a city council member once, and our budget started. We started in May or June, and they were a calendar budget. The state, of course, runs from July 1st to June 30th, and sometimes those things don't line up, so we could be talking 18 to, what's 12 on top of that? 30 months. So 24 sounds like a good number, 2 years. So let's support 2 years and move the amendment. Thank you for the good discussion. This is committee work. I like that. So the maker of the motion could incorporate it, I suppose, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Rev. Benson, do you want to
make a motion that the amendment be for 2 years?
For 2 years. All in favor of that motion to change that to 2 years?
Aye.
Say aye. Aye. Opposed? And we have a 2 year. All right, to the amendment as amendment. Any more discussion? Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm fine. Actually, I was on the 1 year side, but I'm okay with that. But I just want everyone to keep in mind this is a fixed pot of money. So when we expand the eligibility for one community, that does conceivably take from the pot for that everyone else. It's not an unlimited pot of funds. So I just want to keep in mind as this moves forward and as discussions of Representative Beard you can have with Representative Quam about what it needs to be,
sure.
That if we extend it from 1 to 2, we're just saying for 2 years from this limited pot of money, you have an extra player in it. And I just wanted to point that out.
Members, any further discussion to the A4 as amended? Seeing none. All in favor of the A4 as amended, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? A4 as amended is adopted. We have the Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry, I'm looking at the AEA amendment. It says something about roundabouts, and it just struck me as one of our favorite subjects. I would encourage the chair to run a fast gavel and keep the conversation to less than 2 hours on this amendment.
All in favor of the AEA?
I don't see the AEA.
Roundabout, that was an old song back in the 70s. I've got it on.
Yes. By yes,
and I have it on an 8-track. That's how old I am. Anyway, Representative Shemansky to your AEA.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the AEA amendment for inclusion in House File 1068, the DE3 amendment. For explanation, this just came to me at the request of some officials in my district where we have a couple of roundabouts, and basically the exits on a roundabout are approximately 45 feet apart, so to be able to signal your intention 100 feet in advance of your turn is a physical impossibility, so they just asked us to clean up the statute a little bit for folks traveling through roundabouts.
Thank you. Members' questions to the AA?
Makes sense.
Makes sense.
I just feel like my grandpa just leaves his right turn signal on all the time.
That is your one comment on the amendment, then, Chair Beard? Okay.
We'll accept the amendment.
Members, any discussion? All right. All in favor of the A8, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? And the A8 is adopted. And we're down to the A1, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author, thanks for giving me just a few minutes for something that I'm not moving, but doing for information, and if the pages could distribute this. There's a... In February of 2011, the Insurance Institute issued a report. Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Somebody just brought this issue to me this week. It is obviously the kind of thing that we need to have a bill for that is introduced early in the session because it has a number of stops to make and is, of course, very controversial. I think I can count at least four authors in the last 12 to 15 years that have worked on this, as I recall. Representative Biernat, Representative Thiessen, Representative Dabney, and I did at one time. You notice that three of them are from Minneapolis. At one point, Minneapolis, believing they had the local authority, went ahead anyway. The courts found against them, and if Mr. Burris could just quickly give us a sense of what that finding was based on.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the essence of the series of court decisions regarded the authority that Minneapolis or any local unit of government had to install and enforce traffic on the basis of automated traffic enforcement mechanisms. The court essentially found that that authority didn't exist and would be inconsistent with other provisions in state statute.
And so, members, the amendment that's brought was brought to me this week with that in mind, and it talks about the local authority. I would like to just call attention to a few things in the Insurance Institute's report, which I think are motivation for us to continue to look at this. Red light cameras saved 159 lives from the 2004 to 2008 period in 14 of the biggest U.S. cities. Had cameras been operating during that period in all large cities, a total of 815 deaths would have been prevented. And they go into great detail about how that was determined. Researchers compared those with red light cameras to those without. They looked at how fatal crashes changed from the time of an introduction to camera to before. National surveys indicate widespread support for red light cameras, but at the same time, opponents of automated enforcement have become increasingly vocal. One of the arguments is that there's a belief that they're simply done by a local entity to be revenue-generating schemes that violate drivers' privacy. Representative Nelson might want to remind us of another of those.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hausman. And when this came up before, I'm not a big fan of these. The big reason is the ones as they were installed in Minneapolis only take a picture of the license plate. So I could borrow Representative Hausman's car, and I could be running red lights, and she would be getting all my tickets. And they have technology where they can do split cameras where they're taking a picture of the driver as well as the license plate. And if that was if the bill that came forward to that effect, I might be willing to support it. But as of now, I'm not in favor of these because, again, you're giving a ticket to the car, not to the driver of the car. And it's not the car that's the one, just like a gun is not the one that it's the operator of the gun that's the one that is at fault. It's not the car that's at fault.
And Mr. Chair, the Insurance Institute report observes that somehow the people who get tickets because they have broken the law have been perceived as the victim, but we often don't hear the statistics about those people who are killed. That's obviously the issue we're trying to get at. And one of the reasons I think you see large cities continue to press this is we know we're not getting any more money. red light, without cameras, enforcement is not only difficult but probably dangerous. For example, in order to stop a red light runner, the officer would probably have to follow the vehicle through the red light, endangering themselves and other motorists. Policing intersections on a regular basis makes it prohibitively expensive. But here's what the findings are. Institute studies of camera programs have found that red light violations fell not only at those controlled intersections where cameras were installed, but the effect spilled all over the city at all of the intersections just because of the presence of it as of some. I think it's going to continue to be something that cities bring forward to us, and it is primarily because we know they're not going to get any more enforcement people, and that this continues to be one tool that more and more cities are trying. So I'm bringing it for information, and I know you have a constituent who has had a great interest in this and has probably called each of us a number of times. Because it's controversial, and because it has a lot of committee stops to make, it's obviously something difficult to enter into a bill at this late point in the session, but I thank you very much for giving me a moment to, there are so many new people on the committee that it is probably an issue that, though you and I have heard it many times, they have not.
Chair Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Hausman, for raising the issue and for your consideration. Yes, the veteran members of this committee are on his speed dial, I'm sure. Freshman members, you will be, I'm sure, as well. He's very passionate about highway safety and calls us all regularly, and this is one of his initiatives. And not only, many folks have been interested in this issue, so we should, members, have a full hearing on this sometime after the dust dies down a little bit here. And vet it. Yes, there are many stops to make. I'm sure civil law and public safety and judiciary and several people would want to hear and talk about this because there's many ramifications. So thank you for your offer, your discussion, and withdrawing the amendment. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Representative Hausman, for the information. It's a hot topic coming up. Chair Beard.
Mr. Chairman, there are two other motions that I would be happy to entertain. I believe Representative Champion has a motion.
Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to offer or move House File 1345 and ask that it be included. Adopted as a part of this omnibus bill.
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, I'd speak in favor of that motion and ask the committee to support the motion. And perhaps we have to ask Mr. Burris how that proceeds. Can we just make the motion, he notes it, and then add it into a new engrossment of the amended House file?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, yes, that's sufficient. I'll work with the Revisor's Office on the engrossment if this is adopted by the committee to be included.
Thank you.
Representative Champion.
Just for clarity, because I know I'm looking at some folks' faces, House File 1345 is the bill that you heard today. That is the department's bill.
Thank you.
Members, any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the of Representative Champion's motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted.
And Mr. Chairman, I believe there's one other motion to be made.
Chairman.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Chairman, and I also would like to move House File 1333, the bill we heard earlier, is to be amended into House File, the DE amendment of House File 1068.
Members, discussion to the motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
And I want to do that with the caveat that I'm going to continue to work with the AGC and MnDOT to get the language right, that, and we'll probably have an amendment either later on or on the floor to fix the thing that we talked about the 10 years from two project a year to 10 projects total.
Okay. Chairman,
thank you for that, Representative Nelson. Thank you. Chair Beard.
Mr. Chairman, I'd urge members' support.
Yeah.
Please.
And, Mr. Chair, I guess I've been told I'd have to move the bill as amended.
As amended, correct.
Yeah.
So all those in favor of the motion to include House File 1333 as amended into House File 1068, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? It is adopted. Chair Beard.
Chairman, I'm aware of no other amendments to the bill. I just want to say thank you to the committee for your good work in putting this small policy bill together. I look forward to your support on final passage, and we send it to Ways and Means. Unless there are further questions or discussion, Mr. Chairman. Oh, I suppose, Mr. Chairman, before we go to final passage, if there's anyone in the audience, may want to ask that question.
Anybody in the audience to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, members, any further discussion of the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of House File 1068 as amended to be passed on to Ways and Means, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? And it's on the way to Ways and Means.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Our next meeting will be Wednesday at 12:30 here, or Monday. Monday here at 12:30.
We have an agenda for Monday.
Senate file.
All right. Thank you.
With that, we are agendaed. Adjourned. All right.
We'll be listening to.